Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. If you've been watching the technological landscape lately, virtual reality, VR, it seems like it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of stuck in this awkward phase, isn't it? Is it just a niche gaming thing, or is it genuinely, the future of how we interact with computers?
Yeah, that's the big question. And we're here today to try and answer exactly that, looking hopefully far past just the consumer hype.
Right.
Our mission really is to understand the true transformative potential of VR. And we're using Samuel Greengard's foundational book, Virtual Reality, from the MIT Press Essential Knowledge series as our guide.
And what immediately jumps out, like right from Greengard's core argument, is that maybe we should stop viewing VR as just a gadget or, a passing trend.
Yeah.
He frames it as the next logical evolution of the entire human-computer interface. I mean, we've gone from typing commands to clicking icons, tapping on glass.
And now.
And now, it seems, we're moving inside the digital world itself.
Yeah, and this deep dive feels pretty crucial because Greengard gives us the sort of informed context we need to see why VR matters now in everything from, say, medicine to design fields you might not typically connect with strapping on a headset.
Absolutely. So to really appreciate his analysis, let's talk about the author for a sec. Samuel Greengard.
Okay.
He's a seasoned journalist, an author, a researcher. He's apparently spent decades covering that really fascinating intersection of tech, business, and, society.
And what makes him, I think, the perfect guide here is that he isn't, a hardware engineer trying to sell you his latest product.
Right. No agenda there.
No.
Yeah.
He's described as a professional synthesizer, a knowledgeable observer. He kind of cuts right through the technical jargon and, let's be honest, the marketing fluff,
mm-hmm.
giving us that holistic sort of 360-degree view.
I think that lack of technical bias is really important. He focuses on the significance of the technology, not just the specs.
Yeah.
Which makes his book, I feel, an indispensable foundational guide for anyone, whether you're running a business or just, trying to make sense of this extremely complex shift.
And let's start with this incredibly ambitious idea, this premise. VR is basically the culmination of a century-long human quest, a quest to create deeply immersive, simulated experiences.
And the book argues pretty strongly that the real power of VR isn't tied to, say, pixel count or processor speed, but its ability to generate something psychological, something he calls presence.
Presence. That's probably the single most important concept in the whole book. It's that cognitive, a sensory illusion that you're actually in another place.
Like your brain is truly fooled.
Exactly. Sure. When you reach out and your brain expects to feel a wall, even if the wall isn't physically there, that expectation, that means you've achieved presence. It's this profound neurological trick that shifts us from just passively watching a screen to actively participating in a digital reality. It's a huge difference.
The structure of the book is pretty effective because it grounds you first. It clearly defines VR, puts it on that reality-virtuality continuum,
right,
distinguishing it from related tech like augmented reality, AR, and mixed reality, MR. So VR is fully digital, whereas AR and MR overlay digital stuff onto the physical world we see.
Exactly. Getting those definitions straight is key. And once he's laid those out, then he explores the technology's surprisingly long history, breaks down the current anatomy, the sensors, the hardware, and then showcases those real-world value-creating applications that, frankly, we're all eager to talk about.
Okay, so let's jump into that conceptual framework then, starting right at the heart of it. How do we achieve that magic, that sense of presence? You mentioned we need to distinguish it from immersion.
Right. Immersion is, let's say, the technical requirement.
Yeah.
It's the quality of the system, the wide field of view, the high refresh rate, the visual clarity, the 3D audio, maybe haptic feedback.
Yeah.
Can the system technically deliver an all-encompassing sensory experience? That's immersion.
Okay, so that's the hardware's job.
Pretty much. Yeah. And presence is the result. Presence is the psychological phenomenon, that feeling of being there.
Mm-hmm.
A system has to be highly immersive to even have a chance at achieving presence.
Got it.
But the ultimate value of VR, its real power for training, therapy, design, whatever, that's only unlocked when presence is actually achieved, when your brain buys it.
I have to say, I was genuinely surprised by how far back Greengard traces this whole quest for presence. He calls the 19th century, with its stereoscopic viewers and those huge panoramic paintings, the era of proto-VR.
Yeah.
They were trying to trick the eye into perceiving depth and space long, long before computers even existed.
It's really not a modern invention at all, is it? The real visionary prototypes arrived in the 1960s, which is kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, like Morton Heilig's Sensorama in 62.
Exactly. A mechanical device, not even computer-driven, that stimulated sight, sound, smell, touch. It was kind of proto-immersion, really focusing on sensory overload.
And then the landmark moment, 1968, Ivan Sutherland's The Sword of Damocles.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first true head-mounted display, or H&D. Okay, it was enormous, apparently hanging from the ceiling.
Right. Not exactly portable.
No. But it established the core principle, a computer-generated world that tracked your head movements.
Yeah, and of course, the term virtual reality itself, that was coined later by Jaron Lanier. But crucially, the technology just wasn't ready in the 1990s. It failed expectations, leading to what people call the VR winter.
Right. The hype outran the capability.
Totally. The tech just wasn't there yet.
So the success we're seeing, or starting to see today, is really based on solving the technical problems of that winter. Okay, let's demystify the current anatomy then. For people watching the current landscape, what technical breakthroughs actually allow us to feel that presence now?
Well, it really comes down to two main things, the HMD itself and the tracking technology.
Yeah.
For the HMD, you need a really high refresh rate. That's the speed the image updates.
Okay.
If it's too slow, you get that lag, that latency that plagued earlier systems. If the screen update lags even a tiny bit behind your head movement, the illusion just shatters and you feel sick.
Ah, so that directly links a technical spec refresh rate to the user experience, like avoiding motion sickness.
Precisely. But tracking how the computer knows where you are and where you're looking, that seems even more complex. Greengard spends quite a bit of time explaining degrees of freedom, or DOF.
Yeah, I saw that. 3DOF versus 6DOF.
Because that's the real game changer. 3DOF, 3 degrees of freedom, only tracks your orientation. Think of watching a 360-degree video. You can look up, down, left, right.
But you're fixed in one spot.
Exactly. You can't lean closer to an object or walk around. 6DOF tracks both orientation and position. This is the massive difference between just looking around from a fixed point and being able to actually walk around a virtual room, duck under a virtual table, or lean in for a closer look.
Okay, so 6DOF is what creates that feeling of agency, right? The ability to physically interact and move within the space.
You got it. That's essential for presence.
And how does the headset actually achieve that positional tracking? How does it know where it is?
Well, the book contrasts the older methods with the new. Outside-in tracking needed external sensors, like little lighthouse boxes you put in the room to watch the headset.
I remember those. A bit cumbersome.
Yeah, setup could be a pain. But the industry has largely moved towards inside-out tracking now. That means the cameras are mounted right on the headset itself.
Oh, clever.
Yeah, they watch the environment around you and use some pretty smart algorithms to figure out where the headset is in relation to walls, furniture, etc. That makes the whole system far more portable and user-friendly. No external sensors needed.
Okay, that makes sense. So the ability to track accurately and interact naturally, that's why VR is finally moving out of just the gaming den and into these serious applications. This feels like the core proof of Greengard's thesis.
I think so too.
So where is VR making the most profound impact today outside of entertainment?
Healthcare, probably without a doubt.
Huh.
The ability to simulate risk-free, high-stakes scenarios.
Yeah.
It's just invaluable. You've got platforms like AssoVR.
Right, I've heard of that.
Allowing surgeons to rehearse complex, maybe rare procedures over and over until they achieve mastery. That can dramatically improve patient outcomes and honestly reduce training costs.
Add in mental health too, right? That BraveMind program sounds incredible, using presence for therapeutic good.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Therapists use VR to create these very controlled exposure therapy scenarios, for instance, helping veterans with PTSD confront and process traumatic memories, but in an environment that feels realistic yet is completely safe and managed.
Wow, that's powerful.
It's also reshaping, you know, physical industries. Take Ford Motor Company, for example. They're using VR for virtual walkthroughs of car prototypes at a full 1.1 scale. Engineers can literally step inside a car model that doesn't physically exist yet.
So they can check ergonomics.
Exactly. Check ergonomics, see if the A-pillar blocks the driver's view, test assembly line processes, all long before they commit to expensive physical modeling or tooling.
That sounds like huge cost savings and much faster design iteration. And for mass scale training, you mentioned Walmart.
Yeah, that's a fascinating case. They've deployed tens of thousands of headsets to train over 1 million employees on high-stakes, stressful scenarios.
Like what?
Things like how to manage chaotic Black Friday crowds, or how to react safely to a sudden supply chain disruption, or even dealing with difficult customer interactions. That kind of experiential learning, actually doing it in VR, makes the training stick much better than just reading a manual.
Yeah, I can see that. These applications really illustrate the core insights GreenGuard wants us to take away. Maybe we should distill those key themes now.
Good idea. First, I'd say VR is the ultimate interface.
Meaning it's spatial, it's embodied. It forces us to realize we're moving past the old screen metaphor.
Right. We exist within the computation, interacting directly with natural movements, pointing, grabbing, walking, rather than through abstract things like icons and keyboards.
Okay, that's a big one. What's second?
The second major theme is about timing. A long gestation for an overnight sensation. We see VR's viability picking up today and think, wow, this came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it feels sudden.
But it's really the payoff from decades of slow, persistent progress in computing power, display tech, sensor tech. We really have to appreciate those deep roots to understand where it might be going next.
That context is important. And third, you mentioned ethics earlier.
Yes, the ethical caution, the double-edged sword of immersion, the very power to achieve presence, to make the brain accept the illusion so readily. It's also the source of some serious risks.
Like privacy.
Absolutely, especially privacy. When the tracking includes not just where you look, but your eye movements, your hand gestures, potentially even physiological responses like heart rate. That data stream offers an unprecedented level of behavioral insight.
Wow.
And that power, if it's exploited, well, it represents a whole new frontier for data exploitation and, frankly, serious ethical concern. We need to be talking about that.
That definitely makes the technology feel incredibly high stakes. The book contains some truly memorable ideas, little phrases that frame this discussion perfectly. I pulled out three that really stuck with me.
Okay, let's hear them.
First, virtual reality is not about escaping the real world. It is about creating new ways to understand and interact with it. I like that because it directly tackles that sort of dystopian escape pod stereotype. It refocuses VR onto its utilitarian value as a simulator, a tool for mastering real-world skills or understanding complex systems.
Yeah, I like that framing too. It's an enhancement tool, not purely a replacement. Okay, what's the second core idea?
We are currently in the dial-up era of virtual reality and the metaverse.
Huh. That's a fantastic analogy, isn't it?
It really is, because if your only experience with VR so far is maybe a clunky headset or slightly basic graphics, you might just dismiss it.
Right, this isn't that impressive.
Exactly. But GreenGuard argues you shouldn't judge the long-term potential of this whole platform based on its early, maybe slow, high-friction stage, just like we wouldn't have dismissed the entire internet back when we were listening to those screeching dial-up modems.
Very true. Good perspective. And the third idea.
This one sums up the technical evolution, I think. Virtual reality promises to eliminate the interface between humans and computers. The computer kind of becomes invisible. The barrier between, say, thought and action starts to dissolve because we interact using natural physical movements, not mediated through a mouse or keyboard.
So less abstraction, more direct interaction. Makes sense.
So thinking about listeners, maybe professionals or educators, how do you actually apply these principles? The book gives some actionable insights here, right?
It does. For educators, the key takeaway is probably leveraging experiential learning. If you teach abstract concepts like, I don't know, molecular structures or ancient historical sites or astronomical phenomena.
Things hard to visualize.
Exactly. VR can transform that abstract idea into something tangible, memorable, and genuinely participatory for students. Imagine walking through ancient Rome instead of just looking at pictures.
Yeah, that's a different level of engagement. And for professionals,
Yeah.
say in design, engineering, architecture.
You really have to adopt VR's framework for prototyping and visualization, prioritizing those 1.1 scale virtual models to identify design flaws or ergonomic issues super early on. That's going to save significant time and, importantly, costs down the line, catching mistakes before you build anything physical.
Makes perfect sense. And what about for personal growth?
Remember GreenGuard's concept of the empathy machine? I think that's a really powerful application, using VR intentionally to shift your perspective.
How so?
By stepping into the virtual shoes of someone else, maybe experiencing a simulation of a refugee camp or navigating a city with a particular disability, it offers this profound embodied understanding of social issues that just watching a documentary or reading an article. Well, it can never quite achieve that same gut level impact.
That's a really interesting application. You know, what stands out to me the most after digging into this is exactly what Greengard set out to prove. VR is definitely not an overnight sensation.
Yeah.
The fact that pioneers like Sutherland established core HMD principles way back in the 1960s, it just reminds us that this transition in some ways has been kind of inevitable, just waiting for the tech to catch up.
Right.
And I think the most valuable lesson is that this really is a new medium. It requires entirely new literacies, different ways of thinking and interacting, completely different from television or the flat web we're used to.
And I think that leads perfectly into the final thought. We really must recognize that the true revolution right now is happening in places like hospitals, factories, and design studios, maybe not just in living rooms yet.
Oh.
And because we are at this critical juncture, we have a responsibility, I think, to proactively shape the development of VR, to maximize its huge benefits, while really thinking hard about mitigating those serious ethical and social risks, especially around behavioral data exploitation that inevitably come with such powerful immersive technology.
Yeah, it feels like we're just at the beginning, but the stakes are already high. This book truly does feel like an indispensable map to understanding this new territory we're all stepping into. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by a Contra Foundation.